This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
India is in a dire COVID crisis, while the Biden administration pledged to share tens of millions of doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine with India and other countries. That vaccine still must be approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And those doses will not arrive in India for some time. The country is breaking new records daily. Today, India reported more than 350,000 new cases and 2,800 plus deaths. Many experts believe those numbers substantially undercount the true impact.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome. It is good to be here with you. That report from PBS NewsHour, I think it's a good reminder that we need to pray for those in India who've been affected by COVID. You know, we're going to dive into this in just a moment here. I was just thinking about how the world changes, how quick time elapses, and how things change. I remember when COVID was raging, remember we were all locked down? I remember watching the television news at night, and I've said this to you before, this is also during a political cycle, right? It was all led by death toll numbers. They kept creeping up, and the narrator would say every night, I said to my wife, I said, watch this. I'm going to tell you what the lead story is, and I'm going to tell you what the script writers are going to say. A grim new milestone for COVID, and they go and give you the death toll, and they go right into it. They led the same way every single night. Seems that a lot of people are now vaccinated. Herd immunity is on the rise. You've seen the president, you know, saying, hey, you can take your mask off. Things are feeling and looking a little bit better here in America, but that's not the case in India right now. They are in the middle of COVID-19, and their surge is breaking world records. And I want to put this on your radar. I don't know if you're following it at all. I just want you to pray for them. They're our brothers. They are our sisters. We need to really pray for so many who are losing loved ones as a result of COVID. According to CNN, on Monday, India reported 352,000, almost 353,000 new cases. That broke the previous record. So that was, by the way, is also set by India. And you have to remember the population in India is so huge, right? Unfortunately, the Indian government is not prepared to deal with this, and neither is the Indian civic society. ITV News in India will give you a real, true, and unfortunately a harsh look at the suffering that's happening.
Death and grief in India, both are now on heartbreaking public display. Where a son begs for his father's body to be taken to the crematorium for his last rites. Where the virus has returned at such speed, it has far outpaced this country's ability to cope. Sunita mourns for her brother, just 45 years old. COVID is claiming ever younger victims. And in the country that is home to the world's biggest manufacturer of vaccine, too often there is none. In Mumbai today, crowds queued for precious doses with little regard to safe social distancing. Aid from overseas, ventilators and machines to make oxygen will arrive tomorrow.
Yeah, speaking of ventilators and oxygen, what a horrible way to die, not being able to breathe. I mean, I can't imagine that. And this is, in many cases, COVID affects the lungs, the respiratory system, as you know, a lot of people. Father Ubald, he battled that. He was on a ventilator for a long time. Hospitals there are running out of oxygen for ventilators. Some people have died simply because they can't breathe, simply because of lack of oxygen. They're also running out of other basic medical supplies. Dr. Ashish, he's a medical professional. He reacted to India's pandemic on PBS NewsHour. Listen to this.
This is a very difficult situation that India finds itself in. You know, there's been chronic underinvestment both in the healthcare and the public health systems of India. It was not ready to cope with a crisis of this size. And what that means is that hospital beds are running out. Doctors and nurses are getting infected at alarming rates. And obviously, that means that for people who have COVID, there's no place to get care. But it's also a tragedy for everybody else who needs health care. If you have a heart attack or a stroke or get into a car accident, there really isn't a recourse. It's a system that's on the brink of collapsing, and it's going to have huge health effects and other types of effects for a long period of time.
One other thing that a lot of people don't think about and I was ruminating on this a little bit earlier. India, of course, is primarily a Hindu country, and the funeral pyres for cremating bodies, they're piling up. The last religious rites are now being rushed, and it is just a very macabre scene. What's interesting is that the country's average age, and take a guess, let me just throw this out to you. What is the average age in that country? Is it, I don't know, 27, 37, 57, 67? Is it an older nation, younger nation? Where would you put the average age? I was shocked when I read this morning. The average age in the country of India is 27. That's all. Which means a lot of young people are being impacted. So again, as a brother in Christ, as your brother, I'm asking, let's pray for the people of India. It's one thing we can do. The Holy Father has come out, and I have not really shared a whole lot about this with you, but he's called for the rosary to help bring an end to this pandemic. And I don't have my notes in front of me. I read it a couple days ago. I read the article where he, and I'll try to dig it up maybe before the chapel, I can share it with you, where he wants the world to pray the rosary. I think they're doing it every day. But if you're not doing it, of course, you can join Father Rocky in the evening here at 7 p.m. Central. You can join me during the chapel. We should be praying for an end to this pandemic. We've got to be praying for an end of it and for protection over our loved ones and our own country. Related to that, here in the U.S., the number of insurance companies have quietly reinstated the fees that they've waived when the pandemic began last year. Can you imagine if you got sick from the pandemic? You go to the ER, you end up being in a hospital bed, you're on a ventilator, you have all this special treatment. Can you imagine what they could bankrupt you? I mean, I can't imagine what that hospital bill would be like. You know how much an aspirin is, right? A lot of insurers have waived, you know, they used to waive these copays and these deductibles and other fees for patients who got sick with COVID-19. Now that's going away. And, of course, it could only go on for so long. According to NBC News, copays, coinsurance, deductibles, they're being brought back into place. But most testing and vaccinations, I believe, are still free. So if you need to get tested, go ahead and do that. Hey, one other thing here. Do you remember that in October of last year, we were supposed to reach the deadline for getting the real ID? Now, I just flew. I was out of town. I was away for a couple days, as you might know. And of course, when you go through an airport, you have to show your ID. Well, the government had wanted during the pandemic year for us to have these real IDs, and then it got pushed. So the government ID that's now required in order for you to board a plane, okay, and everybody has to have it. I don't care if you pulled up to the airport and you said, here's my license. They'd say, sorry, you can't get on the flight. You needed a real ID. Well, the deadline's been pushed off for a year because no one was able to get into your state DMV office. So ABC News was reporting that it's been delayed again, this time all the way to May 3rd of 2023. So expectations for voter ID requirements, they certainly differ, and they differ based on political affiliation. And you're going to need this. You have another 2 years before you have to get one. But NBC News will break down all the specifics, if this is new to you, of what the real ID is all about.
Some breaking news this morning about the real ID. There's no rush to get one. The Department of Homeland Security is just announcing it's extending the Real ID full enforcement date. Instead of October 1st of this year, the deadline is being pushed back 19 months. DHS says the pandemic has limited states' ability to issue Real ID compliant driver's licenses and ID cards, so that new date for full enforcement is not going to be until May 3rd of 2023.
Well, there you go. You got a little bit of time. Speaking of IDs, there was an NBC poll, and I was going to share this audio with you. Finds said that about 58% of Americans are more concerned that people who can vote are able to vote. But people who say that the Republican are more likely to want to make sure that, those who are not eligible to vote don't vote. So now I don't know if there's any real difference here or if it's just a matter of emphasis, but it seems to me that people who are able to vote should do their part and vote, right? And those who aren't eligible to vote for whatever reason, whether it's because they've already voted or because they're not citizens or whatever, should not be able to vote, and government officials should make sure that they don't vote. I know I'm probably sounding very confusing to you right now. It's not an either-or situation. It's a both-and. And it's too bad that NBC is using this as a way to further divide the country and to put a certain segment of the population into a bad light simply because of a different perspective. I also don't think that there's anything wrong with requiring to show an ID. I just, you know, we just talked about the real ID. You will not be able to get on an airplane with your license. If you can't fly on a plane without a specific type of government ID, you need to have this special ID, right? You need that. Then why can't we require citizens, when they go to vote, to, you know, one of the great privileges that we have in this country, to show that you're really eligible to vote, that you're not voting twice, that you are who you say you are? You know, I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, I have a real issue with that. You know, people have, they want everybody to vote without an ID. Well, why can't we just fly on a plane then without an ID? Huh? It doesn't make any sense at all to me. On another issue, the president, as you probably have heard, is probably going to raise your taxes. I mean, some think, oh, no, he's going to cut my taxes. I do want to talk a little bit about what is coming your way. The president is going to be giving a speech tonight, and if you tune into me tomorrow around this time, I will give you some analysis and a breakdown of exactly what he's promising. It's a joint session of Congress that he's going to be speaking to, kind of an unofficial State of the Union address. And over the last couple of weeks leading up to it, the administration has been letting us know what they plan to do with their tax policies. And this affects you. This is going to affect your wallet. You know, apparently, they want to raise taxes. Of course, before the taxes, there's the spending of this $1.9 trillion on supposed pandemic relief. And as we talked about, $1.9 trillion, right? Only a fraction of it went to pandemic relief. A lot of it went to special interest costs. $2.3 trillion they want to spend on infrastructure bill. And again, $1.8 trillion. I mean, these are all T's. We used to talk about billions, right? Oh, what a big number. How many zeros, right? Trillion is a new billion. So you got $1.9 trillion on pandemic relief, $2.3 trillion on infrastructure, $1.8 trillion on education, including 4 years of free college. Now that might make you happy. $1 trillion for struggling cities, $180 billion on public housing, $200 billion for universal daycare, and get this. I know it's a lot of numbers. I know. $15 trillion over 15 years on making family-sustaining union jobs. I want to thank, of course, Jim Garrity from the National Review for that summary. He's the one who crushed all those numbers. But with all of that spending, that means that your taxes have to be raised. So let me just share with you here what one of the president's foremost economic advisors, a guy named Brian Deese, had to say. He was at a press conference, and he outlined the proposal on a capital gains tax hike, which he claims may not affect a lot of people. This might affect you, though. Listen.
This change will affect taxpayers making more than $1 million a year. In 2018, 0.3% of tax filers made more than $1 million a year. So I want to start by underscoring this in simple terms. This change will only apply to 0.3% of taxpayers, which is not the top 1%. It's not even the top 0.5%.
So you're going to see a lot of different things coming your way, from capital gains to education, you name it. With all of this spending, and I'm just sitting back, the big question that's always asked, who pays for it? Right? Where does the money come from? We just don't print it, right? You and I are going to pay for it. It's almost a legacy tax. Your kids are going to pay for it, and their kids are going to be paying for it. We had a roaring economy, and now we are seeing expanded government, bloated government, big spending, and apparently that's what the administration wants to do. Last week, Wall Street lost a lot of momentum. You might have a 401k, a 403b, maybe invested. Wall Street lost a lot of its momentum because the president announced that he's going to double the current capital gains tax. You just heard, Biden's advisor. There's also a proposal to raise estate tax, also dubbed the death tax, though that may no longer be on the table. I mean, please. They should leave that alone. And he also wants to raise the corporate tax pretty significantly. So one analysis says that while the tax rates of the very wealthy and companies would go up, the tax rate for lower middle class folks, that's going to drop significantly. So they actually may end up not paying any taxes, when it comes to your income tax at the end of the year, and that might make you happy. But again, we're talking big dollars here. I am joined right now by Veronique de Rugge. She is a She's a senior research fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. She's been a guest on the program many times, a nationally syndicated columnist, and she's a really bright, fun person to talk with. And it's always good to have you back. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's start with spending. A lot of numbers here. I don't know if it's if outrageous is a strong enough word to describe what we're seeing here. I don't know where you stand on this, but the Biden administration really is spending big, and we're looking at $22.4 trillion. The current debt right now is $28 trillion. And if you ever look at the debt clock, that thing ticks, you know, incredibly quickly. That number just gets larger. I'd love your take on this. Does it make sense? Is this going to be good for the country? Is it going to be good for the economy? Am I missing something? Yeah, I want to be on the right side of the issue, and I'd love your take.
No, I mean, it's not good for the country because a lot of what the Biden administration is proposing effectively is a really massive centralization of powers into the hands of the federal government. When you look at the infrastructure bill that you talked about, $2.3 billion, hundreds of billions of dollars of this are actually going to hand out subsidies to massive companies that are extremely profitable and also massively invested in federal infrastructure as it is. Electric power company invested more in their infrastructure in 2020 than they did the year before. That is during, and they're going to get $100 billion. Same thing for rail. And and you can go down. You can go down the line. Broadband will be getting companies like Verizon, AT&T, MT would be getting like $100 billion. Well, they invest $50 billion a year already in the electric grid. And so it's just basically handing money to your friends. But what it means is when the government gives you something with one hand, it takes it with the other. Yeah. And there are a lot of string attached. You have to do green stuff. You also, then it takes it, of course, with the tax stuff. And then when you look at the new iteration of the last thing all around, is basically kind of saying the federal government is going to be not companies in charge of providing things like childcare, paid leave, and all sorts of things that should not be provided by the federal government. So it's not good. Leaving the sheer size of the spending alone and the potential impact on inflation and all of that stuff and the debt and economic growth, like this massive and really unprecedented, really, I think, really, since the New Deal, concentration and power in the hands of the federal government should be, concerning to all.
So the solution or the plan for this is that we tax the rich and corporations, but with so much, we're talking tens of trillions of dollars being planned. And we already have a huge debt. I'd like to see us reduce that or somehow get control over that. Does taxing, raising, corporate income tax or taxing the rich, will that make a dent in this? Or will middle-class America eventually have to shoulder some of this this debt as well?
Well, so let's imagine that the president gets all the tax increases that he wants.
Yep.
That doesn't even begin to cover all the spending he's put forward. I mean, thankfully, a lot of it hasn't passed yet. But more importantly, is like the thing that's the irony of this whole thing is like on one hand, it's handing out subsidies to big companies while taxing the hell out of them, on the other side, through the corporate income tax and stuff like this. And the real problem is like the federal government plays a big role through regulation, but actually really the big actor in investing in infrastructure and things like this is the private sector. 65% of assets are owned by the private sector. And it means that when you actually are taxing them over the head like this, across the board, they're going to be much less much less investment, the capital increase, the capital gain increase, it means that actually people are going to be trying to put their money not in risky new ventures, but actually maybe like government bonds or things like this. So it's totally, it's just totally counterproductive.
They're going to leave the country, right? I mean, here's the thing. Will the wealthy stay in the United States if capital gains are that high, if they're being taxed at heavenly? Won't they find tax shelters overseas?
Well, I mean, or capital, capital is really mobile. So, I mean, obviously, a lot of that tax arbitrage is going to happen. But there are things, by the way, they're trying to actually also at the same time with a global minimum tax that they're talking about for company, they are actually trying four big multinational corporations trying to make sure that some of these arbitrage are not possible. And by the way, create a big tax cartel between high tax nations. So it's really, it's counterproductive all around. And even if you thought this was a good idea, and by the way, you know, companies are never the one actually paying the money.
Right.
They're paying the taxes. People are. And one of the things that that the Democrats refuse to understand about the corporate income tax is that ultimately it is always paid for, at least a big share of it, by workers in the form of lower wages.
Hey, I only have a moment or two left. I'm just curious. I remember, I think a couple of years ago, France tried raising taxes so much that the state was taking about 50% of the income of the wealthy. I'm sure you're familiar with that. What happened there? How did that turn out?
Well, so they had tried to implement a 70%, like millionaire, a 70% rate, tax rate. And so many millionaire and billionaire were actually moving to Belgium that they had to reconsider. The other thing is, like, it was actually ruled unconstitutional. I can't remember on which ground because I don't follow it quick. But by the way, it's also worth noting that for all the talks about a wealth tax, the French and many other European nations have actually given up precisely because people don't get hit over the head over and over again without actually adjusting the way they invest their money and react. And so these taxes always bring about much less revenue than you expect them to. Yeah. And so it's going to be the same here. I think if they had their ways with their corporate income tax, I mean, they and especially if they put in place a global minimum tax, I mean, they may raise some revenue. It's not going to be significant.
I'm with you.
But they're also,
Hey, Veronique, thank you for being here. Great to talk with you today. As always,
thank
I know people can follow you at Mercatus.org. And I'd love to catch up again soon. Keep up your research and your writing and your great work. Look forward to our next conversation, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
All right. God bless you. All right. It's 26 after the hour. Short pause. I will be back. We've got so much to get in today. Stay with me. Dr. Jay Richards joins me right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Smile and say,
cheeseburger!
Very good! Here's a cheeseburger for you.
One McDonald's in Tampa is offering $50 for prospective employees just to come in for an interview. The location's struggling to hire employees because of increased competition as many businesses reopen and workers reluctant to take frontline jobs at fast food restaurants. The general manager is also offering signing bonuses and allowing people to apply via text.
Get them in the door and wow them. I love this idea, but it is a testament to how difficult the hiring environment is right now.
The Drew Mariani Show is live on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, why is that, huh? That was the morning puzzle, Fox Business. They love the idea. I thought the same thing. I thought, look, if you can't get somebody in your door, pay them to come in. And once they're in, then you can sell them. But what's going on with jobs? Do people not want to work? Do people not have to work? I mean, companies cannot hire employees. It's the strangest thing I've seen. If you drive around any city, I see it in my own area here where I broadcast out of. even if you're in a small town, there are businesses with signs that say now hiring. And on my drive home, I drive past this, I don't know whether it's a lumber place. I'm not quite sure what it is. But I've seen them put up a sign. You know, they were hiring employees for, I don't know, I forget, the $13.75 an hour, let's just say, right? Whatever they needed, some general, you know, the $13 an hour job. Then, like, 4 weeks later, it went up to $14. A couple weeks later, it went to $14.25. And that said to me, nobody's going in for that job. It's amazing. They cannot hire people for these types of jobs. And look, this is true both for small businesses and for large businesses. From your local mom-and-pop pharmacy to Walmart and McDonald's, employers are having a hard time finding employees. Maybe you're in that situation. Feel free to join me, too. You can sound off anytime. It's 888-914-9149. Maybe you have an answer. We have right now a 6% unemployment rate. 6%. With that many people out of work, you would think it would not be that difficult to find somebody who would want to stock a shelf or work in a lumberyard or flip a burger or do whatever, right? But it's so hard to find workers, as you just heard in that package, that McDonald's franchise, the owner there, has resorted to offering $50 to anyone who comes in for the interview. And I do love it because he's going to make a lot more money once he gets the employee in there selling his burgers, right? Get him in, wow him, tell him how great it is, you know, whatever. He's that desperate, he'll pay you $50 to come in for an interview. That money gets paid even if the person is not qualified to work. That's even, you know, even that's not working well. According to the Business Insider, the owner, this is such a weird story. The owner said, to his surprise, offering people $50 simply to come in for an interview still has not convinced many people to apply for jobs. I mean, come in. We'll pay $50. You don't have to take the job. It's $50. Go have dinner, right? He's found more success with referral programs and signing bonuses and allowing people to apply via text message. Last week alone, his 60 restaurants hired 115 new workers. But look, it's not just McDonald's having problems. Be quite honest, you know, you could probably live without McDonald's, but you can't live without fuel. Check this story out, okay? And Dr. Jay Richards is going to be with me. I want to tap into his expertise on this. There was another story that I thought, this is bad news for you. It's bad news for me. CNN reported that we could see a gas shortage later this year. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. It has nothing to do with the Middle East. It has nothing to do with storms off our coast. You know why we're not going to have gas? There'll be a gas shortage. There are not enough truck drivers to get the gas to the stations. Not that we don't have gas. We just can't. There's not enough drivers. When the shutdown hit last year, a lot of truck drivers got laid off because no one was buying gas. But, you know, getting those drivers back, for some reason, it's been a problem. And schools that teach the skills have not been able to keep up with, you know, the now strong demand. So, and then there are unemployment checks that are still coming in for some people, which are very generous. And some people say it's better for me to stay home than to go and work. I'm joined right now by Dr. Jay Richards. He's an assistant research professor at the Bush School of Business and Economics at Catholic University of America. I always enjoy talking with him. He's a senior fellow also at the Discovery Institute and the executive editor at thestream.org. That is a great it's a great publication or website, I should say. Check it out, Stream, okay? Bookmark it, visit it regularly. Doctor, good to have you back with me today. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Drew. Great to be with you.
Boy, it's kind of a crazy story. We can't get people to work. As I said, the unemployment right now is, you know, around 6% or so. What's going on? I mean, we signing bonuses. Like I said, I drove past a place for work, and you know, week after week, the guy kept raising his minimum wage. It went from $13.75 to $14 and some cents an hour. What are you seeing? What's going on?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this story is that it just takes a little knowledge of economics to be able to kind of guess. Probably two of the most important things you can know about economics is that incentives matter. So people do stuff for incentives. So if you can get paid, say, increased unemployment benefits, and you're getting paid more for doing nothing than, say, taking a minimum wage job, it's perfectly rational that you're going to keep taking the unemployment. And so this is always the trade-off whenever we respond with government assistance in a downturn, is that the assistance doesn't actually discourage the thing that, you know, we're trying to temporarily solve. You want to temporarily meet people's needs when they're unemployed, but you don't want to discourage getting back to employment. That's the first thing. The second thing is that one of the most important things governments can do is to allow people to plan. That is the most important thing they can do economically. Businesses, individuals, business owners, potential employees, you got to be able to know what's going to happen 1 week or 2 weeks from now. And so, you know, if you're on unemployment, you're thinking, well, the restaurant industry has been slammed so hard, you don't know for sure what's going to happen. McDonald's is one thing, but say work in a restaurant where most of your income is from tips, there's just a huge amount of uncertainty. And so you just have this kind of employment hesitancy. And what's fascinating, as you said, it's what, about 6.5% unemployment. Yep. Now that's twice what it was back in early March of last year. We had historically low unemployment. Then by May, we had 41 million additional jobless claims, so catastrophic. A lot of that's gone back down. And so what's amazing to me is that we still got a lot of lockdowns, but basically there's uncertainty because there's such a variation. Florida, where the McDonald's owner was, it's actually kind of going gangbusters down there, but you're getting the same problem in places like Boston, which is sort of lockdown happy. So I have to think this is a combination of extreme uncertainty on the part of potential employees, and then also extended unemployment benefits, which are paying better than the minimum wage.
Yeah. There was a caller online that was saying, hey, she couldn't get anyone to fix her fence. Is that because people don't want to work for minimum wage or poverty wages anymore? Hey, what's the mindset behind the potential employee? Is it laziness? Is there something more going on here?
I think there's more going on here because I don't think people have gotten lazier than they were 12 months ago. You know, I mean, there are certainly always some subset of the population. You're never going to get unemployment to zero because some people, for whatever reason, prefer not to work. Either they have money saved up or they just don't want to work. I really think what it is it's basically the 12 months of lessons. And what have most of us learned? You know, unless you happen to be lucky enough to live in South Dakota or Florida, what you've learned is that the government can do almost anything at any time. I've got some friends that are getting ready to get married in the Seattle area. They literally don't know. It's 3 weeks until the wedding. How many people that are going to be allowed to have a reception. It's possible that they might suddenly have to cut the reception by half. So imagine if you're planning catering for something like that, right? And that's just one city in one state. Now multiply that by thousands of cities, all of these states in which we now know, most of us in the, you know, if you're in the restaurant industry until a little over a year ago, it never occurred to you that maybe the government would just say, you have to shut down indefinitely. We're not going to tell you when you have to open. That's now a basic reality for the entire restaurant and hospitality industry, is that your government just might decide you've got to close up shop.
You're right. My guest today is Dr. Jay Richards. I'll take a few of your calls, too. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. We're talking about not finding employees and what's going on in the economy. Elizabeth is listening in Las Vegas, Nevada. She wants to join the conversation with you, Doctor. Hi, Elizabeth. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I just had this conversation with my nephew just about 2 days ago, and I was asking what he was doing. He says, I'm pretty happy right now. I'm getting more money on unemployment than I've ever made. So he's looking at almost $1,000 extra a month compared to his minimum wage job.
Yeah, right.
So it's gonna take a lot to move some of these, kids onto good.
And you don't blame
job.
Him. You don't blame him either if he's gonna make less. Flipping
I
a burger.
The habits they're creating are just.
No, you're right, Elizabeth. I see both sides. If that was my child, I think, oh wow, you're gonna make more money not working. But it brings up a good point here too. What about the ethics of work? Working for the sake of it, the dignity that comes with that. And Doctor, let's talk about that, Elizabeth. I'm so glad you called, because that's such a great point. There's her nephew. I'm making more money on unemployment. Why should I work, right? So, the dignity of work. Do most people have a comprehension of what that means or what that's all about?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because here at the Bush School of Business, where I teach at Catholic University of America, that's one of the first things we teach. In fact, we have the first courses is to teach students that, look, you don't just work to pay the bills. You got to do that, obviously, but you also work because you're created in the image of God. God created the world, and then he expects us to participate in this kind of creative activity. He makes sand and then leaves it to us to make fiber optic Fiber optic cables, the computer chips made of sand, right?
Love it.
We actually fulfill ourselves as human beings made in the image of God in doing that. And that's kind of a weird trade-off. And so, you know, if you're 21 years old and you're thinking, gosh, I really prefer this sort of unemployment, it makes sense.
Yeah.
In the short run, but what we know is that people that do that, if you just stay on unemployment long term, you actually get listless, you get depressed, you lose the skills, you develop bad habits. And so that's the funny, is you're sort of trading kind of short-term pleasure for long-term despair and unemployment, because we're actually, if you're called to work, you're much happier working, even if you can find a way to kind of work the system and not work. And that's why you want the economy to sort of align itself so that it encourages good virtue. We want people to be encouraged to work for a living rather than living on the dole. But if you don't align the incentives and the policies properly, you can misalign those incentives.
That's really true. We'll go back to the phones, grab a few more calls. But I was just thinking about the Industrial Revolution, which completely changed, you know, how people worked. And many people became, you know, cogs in a wheel, if you will, simply cogs for the corporation. Do people feel like they're simply being used for someone else rather than working for themselves? They have a problem with the minimum wage job, which, you know, you're working on the farm or you're flipping the burger, or you're, you know, working in the box store or whatever it might be. I mean, what's the mentality behind that? And does that have any influence on what we're seeing now?
Well, that certainly affects things, but I think a lot of that, Drew, is sort of in the eye of the beholder, you know? And so if you, almost any job has value, assuming you're not doing something intrinsically evil, I'm not talking about prostitution, but like flipping burgers, we always talk about flipping burgers as if there's something intrinsically bad about that. Well, what that is an entry level job. And so, you know, for some people, if you're a 14-year-old kid living in the city with no experience, what you need is a job to make connections, to develop positive habits. It doesn't mean you're going to do that forever. And so I always tell people, there is absolutely nothing wrong with flipping burgers if that's kind of the only thing you can do or the first thing to do. That's better.
Amen.
I think of it as the bottom rung of the economic ladder. But unfortunately, if we get this idea that, well, some jobs are they sort of beneath my dignity or something like that, then you kind of feed that attitude, and that's exactly what you think. We need to really think of any decent work where you're serving other people as dignified and useful.
All right, let's go back to the phones. James is listening in DeKalb, Illinois. James, you're on the air. DeKalb, I should say. Illinois, you're on the air with Dr. Richards. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for my call. One thing that's going on now, too, is that because the government has its hand in so many things, it doesn't allow companies to separate themselves with their benefits. You know, McDonald's used to go and put down all the list of benefits it has. Hey, we're going to help you get through college because this will be your first job. And now, well, who needs it if they're going to pay for, community college for everybody? It's 100 years ago or 75 years ago, they made medical benefits was the big thing. Hey, this employer provides medical benefits. Now, well, you don't need to provide them, and employers have stopped providing them, except where mandated by the government. Why? Because the government's supplying those things. So the government is supplying a lot of things that companies used to supply to make them the more attractive employer. Now, the more attractive employer is the government.
All right. Hey, thank you, James. Let's talk about it. Doctor, your thoughts?
Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, the reality is that in the world that God created, the normal way in which wealth is created is through private business. For some reason, as Catholics, we don't sort of like that idea. We think, well, most people should sort of better if everybody got money from charity or something like that. Well, no, you only have charity. The money from charity also comes from private business. And so you want private businesses to actually be able to prosper and to employ people. The more things that government claims to provide for free. First of all, they can't provide anything for free. The money comes from somewhere.
Yep.
The more they claim to do that, they actually pull the incentives away from the private sector. And so that's why it's a really tricky balancing act, because we don't want a society in which somebody that, you know, just happens to get unemployed starves to death. On the other hand, an economy where people starve to death, they're very strongly incentivized to work for a living. And so how do you balance those things out so that people don't fall between the cracks but we don't create these perverse incentives which really discourage people from finding meaningful work.
Yeah. My guest today, Dr. Jay Richard, I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back after this break, we'll take a few more of your calls. If you are just joining us, we're taking a look at the dignity of work. Really, that's what we're talking about today. A lot of people having difficulty finding people to work for them. Maybe you've gone through this as well. And we're just looking at what's going on, both in the economy and the culture. Stay with us. We're back with more. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Connect to us anytime at facebook.com/Drew Mariani Show. And on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It is always good to look at life with you. We try to do it through the eyes of our faith, give you a moral understanding on everything from what's unfolding in the world to what we're talking about right now, and that is the dignity of work. We're taking a look at the economy. Of course, the president tonight, as I was sharing, is going to address a joint session of Congress. He's going to lay out a big spending bill. I'll give you more on that tomorrow. And if you missed any of my conversation a little bit earlier on that, you can go to our archives or our podcast. Jake will have that posted as soon as we sign off the air. I also invited to join the conversation today, Dr. Jay Richards. You can check him out as executive editor of the stream.org, a great writer. We've spoken about everything from fasting to economics, and he's here today with us today to look at what's happening here. There's incentives for people to work, minimum wage jobs, and people are having difficulty getting that. McDonald's, there was one McDonald's who offered $50 just to come in for an interview, and they still had trouble finding people to work. Maybe you're encountering it as well. We'll grab a few more of your calls. Jackie is listening in Orange County, doctor, and let's get her on. And Jackie, hi. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you. I'm just wondering what kind of an impact it's making, how the workplace has changed so much with the COVID restrictions. For example, people have to wear masks now. They have to stand farther apart. They have to have a somewhat invasive test done on them weekly. If anyone in their office shows positive, they have to stay home for 2 weeks. They have to report places. They say there's a higher incidence of respiratory infections with people, with bacterial infections on their faces. So it sounds to me like some of the jobs you're talking about interface with the public, which would require them to wear them. And I just wonder how much of an impact that is making as well.
So you're saying that most people say, I really don't want to work because I don't want to wear the mask and have to deal with all those headaches, right? Jackie?
Right. Would that be an appealing workplace? Does that have appeal to someone?
Yeah, that's such a great point. Here's my thought on it. Dr. Jay Richards, we just dropped him. He'll be back with us in a second here. He's lost his connection. Get your take. I do think that COVID has really impacted a certain degree of the population in terms of who want to go and work and who don't. I mean, there are people who can't keep a mask on all day. I marvel at some people who can. I was just on a flight from the southern part of the country back up here, and I had to have a mask on from the time I got to the airport, the time I sat on the flight, during the airport where I changed again, then again for the connecting flight, was on all day. So I think you bring up a great point, and when I marvel at the people who got to wear masks all day. Doctor, it's good to have you back here. We just took a call, and a person raised the question about masks in the workplace, whether or not that is a deterrent to whether or not people are not working, and whether or not certain environments might make it more attractive to work when things change. A lot of states have locked down. There are states like Florida that did not. Your thoughts on all that?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge factor. I think it's especially a factor with jobs. Think about the restaurant industry. And so the funny thing now about restaurants in most of the country is that if you eat in a restaurant, at least you can go to a restaurant, right? You wear a mask for 5 seconds when you walk in, and then you can take it off when you're sitting down. But notice everyone working has to wear a mask. Now, I happen to have a job, Drew, where I'm mostly in my office or I'm working at home. I'm on the computer. I don't have to wear a mask, except when I go to the gym, basically. But imagine if you're having to wear a mask 8 hours a day and you're not used to doing it. It's really a torture for a lot of people. So I honestly, I can't blame someone that says, well, I'm making enough on unemployment And at least I know that's coming in. I'm making more than if I take this minimum wage job working in a restaurant where I'm going to have to wear a mask for 8 hours a day. That's absolutely a disincentive for work. And it's not, it's not even a factor that really actually, it's not like you've decided you're going to work in an emergency room. No one ever really imagined you're going to have to wear a mask the entire time. You know, you're filling the dispensers at McDonald's. I think it's a huge burden.
Or working back over the grill with your mask on. I mean, I went to mass today, right? I was sitting in the pew. And all of a sudden, it was hard to breathe. It's like, oh, this mask. I wish I didn't have to wear this mask. And I'm in a big open church. It's not like I'm working over a grill or I'm carrying things that are heavy. So you bring up a great point. Well, Doctor, I'm always grateful for your time and having you here. Before we go, you've got a couple books out. Of course, we've talked about fasting and a whole lot of other things. People want to get connected to you or read some of the writings that you're involved with. What's the best way to connect?
Actually, follow me on Twitter for my real-time thoughts at Dr. J. Richards. And then, of course, as you know, you've interviewed me, my book where I talk about the problems with the lockdowns.
All right. At Dr. J. Richards. That's Twitter. You follow him there. And, Doctor, thank you. We will catch up again, okay?
You bet. Thanks
thank you. That's Dr. Richards. All right. He's, again, assistant research professor at the Bush School of Business and Economics at the Catholic University of America as well, and a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. Always good to have him here with us. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Today's also the feast day of a couple great saints that I have devotion to. I heard Father Kubicki a little bit earlier today on our network talking about St. Louis de Montfort. What a powerhouse saint. John Paul II had tremendous devotion to him. He believed in Marian consecration. I want to talk about that a little bit later because it changed my life. It changed my spirituality. I often talk about divine mercy and how it did that. I also think Marian consecration is liberating, it's freeing, it's empowering, especially if you've got kids, if you have relationship problems, it'll change your spiritual landscape. And we'll fill you in on consecration coming up. And Lucas, who's screening calls today, he just sent me an interesting comment. He was saying, you're talking about wearing masks. He says, great opportunity for penance. And thank you, Lucas. You're right. So often we have crosses. We have sufferings. We have opportunities that we can complain or try to avoid, or we can embrace and allow them to be extraordinary opportunities of grace for those. And the mask wearing and all the other issues that you have, I think it's just that. Today's also the feast of St. Gianna Barreda Mola. She is the patroness of mothers. And coming up in a few moments, we'll pray the chaplet. If you're trying to get pregnant, if you're dealing with infertility, if you've had an abortion, if you're thinking about an abortion, turn to her. She was pregnant with her fourth child in 1961 when she developed a developed a tumor on her uterus. And a doctor gave her three choices. You abort your baby, you have a hysterectomy, or remove this fibroma, and risk further complications. And she did something very heroic. She decided to have the child, even though it could kill her. And she gave birth to a healthy baby girl, Gianna Emanuela. And St. Gianna died 7 days after her daughter's birth. She was ultimately canonized in 2004. And she is a model for anyone who is contemplating pregnancy. She's the patron saint of mothers. Maybe you're having a difficult time being a mother, okay? Maybe you're having a difficult time right now in that role. Maybe you're beating yourself up. You feel like you were a bad mother. Turn to St. Gianna Mola. Look, I believe so much in the power of the intercession of the saints. We're all part of this wonderful communion of saints. And I would call upon her. I know a lot of people are having trouble with fertility too. Why not call upon her? It was Good Friday of the year, April 21st, 1962, when she went to the hospital and she had that fourth child. And of course, she delivered it via C-section, and she continued to have this incredible pain. She actually died. I think there was some sort of septic peritonitis, I think is what she had. It ultimately took her life, and 7 days after she gave birth, she passed away. But John Paul II beatified her on April 24th, 1994. Then he canonized her on May the 16th in 2004. So Today's not officially her feast day, but I think about her in a special way. And I think the Lord wanted you to hear this. There's somebody right now who perhaps is praying for somebody who's having difficulty mothering or trying to get pregnant, and maybe the Lord is putting her on your radar for a reason. Gianna's husband, Pietro, and their last child were present at the canonization ceremony, and I always marvel at that. With the death of your wife, to be there to see her raised to the altars has to be an extraordinary thing, or to be the child. Who was the saint who laid her life down? I'm zoning out right now. In Italy, she was stabbed to death, protecting her purity. Come on, you know it. No, come on. Lucas, you know this. I know you know this. No, not St. Agnes either. Why can't I remember her name? Maria Goretti is her name. Maria Goretti, right? Alessandro was the man who killed her. He was in prison for years. He actually attended her canonization, was there with her mother. So God can work in absolutely miraculous ways. So today we will call upon St. Gianna Mola, and we'll ask her for those pregnancies, those fertilities, those mothering issues. And if you've had if you made a mistake, instead of, you know, giving life to your child, maybe you had an abortion. Again, I'll say to you again, God loves you so much. His mercy is so infinite. You have a greater right to it than anyone. Return to him. Turn to him. Accept it, okay? And know that mistake is but a drop in the ocean of God's mercy. And ask St. Gianna maybe to help you come to terms with forgiving yourself and receiving the mercy that God wants to give you, okay? Let's pray the chaplain. When I come back, you can join me. The number here is 888-914-9149. I know so often you try to get through, and many times you can't. I try to take the first five or six calls. So if you want to get in today, again, put that number in your speed dial. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.